This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
For our next story, though, it is once again about the civil service.
Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad recently said that the size of the civil service is too big and needs to be reduced, and that this can be done through the use of IT and computers. But he noted the challenges that might come with doing so, like the loss of jobs, which would then lead to social problems for the government to deal with much later.
So Home Minister Muhyiddin Yassin came out to say that Tun M's statement wasn't necessarily an indication that the 1.7 million strong workforce would be reduced right now, but rather it's going to happen periodically through the process of industrialization and the use of tech.
Chiming in are also two civil servants that Free Malaysia Today spoke to, A. Jayanath, who was an administrative and diplomatic service officer from 1973 to 2005, said it was silly to expect most jobs from his day to still be relevant now, citing clerical jobs as one example. His solution to civil servants was to subscribe to lifelong learning.
On the other hand, Tan Sri Raymond Navaratnam, former SecGen of the Malaysian Ministry of Transport, said the government could play a role by preparing the groundwork for the downsizing to counter the potential backlash. And he said the government should go, and these are his words, for unproductive and lousy workers first. He also recommended a revamp to the education system to include, kind of more on the digital economy and industry 4.0.
So this conversation about downsizing the civil service comes up time and time again. And I think the political consequences of doing so may be so dire that, you know, no one has really been able to do anything about it. But then now it seems like there's an opportunity here in some sense because of the IR 4.0 that's coming, right? It will happen naturally.
Yes. And I also think that it's going to happen at the same time as a generation of civil servants begin aging out anyway, into a phase of retirement. But for what it's worth, in terms of saying, it needs to be about lifelong learning, I don't necessarily agree with that. Not against it, but if you're doing it for the sake of staying employed, it really depends on your position. I think that there are certain positions where it doesn't matter how good you are at your job. It doesn't matter, how efficient you are. You are not going to be more efficient than a system.
Yeah.
You're not going to be more efficient than a program. And for that reason, lifelong learning then has to extend to other skills, right? And just trying to grapple with that. So we're going to be speaking after this with Tan Sri Dr. Raymond Navaratnam, as mentioned and as quoted in the article. But you can also weigh in. What do you make of the idea that the civil service might be downsized? What do you make of the idea of, you know, that some members of the civil service might be replaced with tech, basically? Let us know. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet at BFM Radio. And of course, you can also call 7733-2900.
Building fit Malaysians. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are talking about news that basically civil servants have kind of told their successors, look, it's probably, you know, there's going to be downsizing, so you need to buck up, or it's just going to, yeah, it's not going to be good for you. And part of that is also, of course, the advent of technology, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be changing the way these jobs are done. So to grapple with all of this, we have on the line Tan Sri Dr. Raymond Navaratnam, economist and former Secretary General of the Malaysian Ministry of Transport. Raymond, thanks for joining us. First up, could you explain why there is a need to downsize the civil service?
Well, we are under budgetary strain. Our main concern is the deficit on the budget and the debt. And partly this is because the operating expenditures of the budget, which are used to finance the cost of the whole public service, has been rising. And therefore, you don't have enough savings on the budget current account to be provided for development or capital expenditure. Hence, you have to borrow. And if you borrow, your debt rises. So that is the reason why we need to downsize. Number two, we have not downsized the budget for many, many years. So it's about time. The timing is right because we are under global restraint in terms of the overall growth of the world economy is slowing down. we are slowing down, I think. And this is the right time with the new government. They can look at it more objectively with a fresh outlook. And I think there is consensus, even amongst the civil service, that it has grown too large. And so the opportunity, the timing is right to reduce the size.
So when you spoke to the FMT, you said that Putrajaya must carefully plan any downsizing efforts or risk getting serious backlash. What do you mean by this?
Well, it's a very human factor. Nobody likes to be dismissed. Suppose you cut down the staff and without explaining to them carefully, without discussing it with them, they will naturally think the individuals concerned are being discriminated against on so many counts. Either somebody doesn't like them, or it's racial, or it's religious, or it's even political, and that can be the worst thing. So that's why I say, treat the civil service with dignity. Bagi hormat sama dia. Dia nak jaga dia punya marwah juga. Sometimes some politicians make some very disparaging remarks, as if the whole civil service is bad. That is wrong, because don't forget, they are the backbone, latar belakang, of the tulang belakang of the whole public service. If they feel they are being fairly treated, that they are doing it as they have pledged in the interest of serving God, King, and country, you will find the civil servants will rally around the government. So treat them graciously and with dignity. Follow our traditions of respect and amicability and do it nicely with style.
How then can the government work to kind of try to start beginning to provide that proper groundwork for downsizing?
Quite simple. I think the Prime Minister should come out. He has before. But it's worth repeating because it's a major exercise which will have maximum impact on the whole country if not handled well. So he should come out and explain. Give figures, comparative figures with other countries. Get the World Bank to help you on it, or the IMF, or any international organization which has got international comparative statistics. Be able to also advise the whole public service about productivity, about the need for cutting down the civil service to make it more efficient, to be able to help reduce the deficit, to help to cut down the debt servicing. They must understand the logic behind it. I think the senior ones most probably will be able to appreciate it. But the ones in the middle level, lower middle and the lowest levels may not see it. Because don't forget, at one time we had isi puno, isi puno. You fill up all the vacancies you can find. And then they got in and they were quite happy.
You also proposed a revamp of the existing education system so students can adjust to the new digital economy. What changes would you like to see?
I think, you know, Asli had a very good dialogue with the minister, YB Mazli. And what I understand as a member of Asli who attended the meeting, the dialogue, basically is make it fun for students to learn and they will learn, acquire knowledge faster and perform better. But you shove things down their throat, they don't like it. I didn't like it in school when I found some teachers just getting me to memorize. You know, you must have fun. You must rationalize what you're doing. You must be critical of what you're studying. And that can be done. Concentrate on the, I don't have to go through all this, but it's all there. Only thing is lacking is political will. You've got to be strict to be kind. These are EQ, emotional quotient qualities, which the schools don't teach now.
So how is the responsibility to hone the skills needed for the digital revolution shared? Is it, you know, solely on the civil servants, or does the government need to play a role as well?
It's both. The civil servants must be inspired into believing that the future is all going to be mostly digitalized and that it's in their interest to learn new skills. Like we all adapted from the old typewriter to the desktop and things like that. So they must also adjust, and they must be encouraged to take up courses. And the government has a responsibility to provide more training for civil servants. You got to tap the best to ensure the others also go up to the top. So we have to provide training, we have to motivate them, and we have to reward them, is important. Reward them according to their grasp of new technology and IT and the digital economy.
How successful has downsizing the civil service been in other countries? What can we learn from it?
Well, the comparative statistics will show you what people don't understand in our country is that the size of the civil service is dependent on our policies. If we feel that the economy should be largely dominated by the government and the public service, either directly or indirectly to GLCs and all that, then we have a different premise. And if you want big government, you will have big civil service. But if you want smaller government and bigger business sector, if you have more active private sector participation in the development of the country, of course, under conditions of proper control, in other words, you don't allow monopolies and oligopolies, but you have competition and ensure that taxpayers of the country deserve the best service through proper guidelines imposed on the private sector so that you minimize excesses and abuses, then let the private sector function and play its role. Then you don't have a large public service. But if you have a lot of isipuno mentality, then you must expect a large civil service. You can't have the cake and eat it. This is what I think many politicians and leaders don't understand.
Ultimately then, why is it important that the downsizing should take place sooner rather than later?
Well, you're already facing a severe deficit. You're facing a debt problem. I'm not saying it's critical. I've never said that. But if you don't watch it, we are on a slippery slope. And we can quickly tip over the top or the cliff if we don't take measures now, preemptive measures to safeguard our integrity, our sovereignty, our economic independence. Otherwise, through corruption, we will sell out the country and others will just come in and buy us over. So that integrity must be there. And you better have a smaller civil service with a higher quality. Pay them even more than you pay now. And you will still save because you get better productivity and better output and better quality of service to not only the country, but the rakyat. The people must feel that they get a bang from their buck.
Raymond, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. That was Tan Sri, Dr. Raymond Navaratnam, economist and former Secretary General of the Malaysian Ministry of Transport. What are your thoughts on the fact that the civil service has been told, look, you know, a downsizing looks like it's going to happen. So also perhaps you need to buck up. Perhaps you need to learn new skills. What's your take on that? You can let us know by calling 7733 2900, WhatsApping 018-789-8899, and tweeting us at BFM Radio.
So we have some tweets about the story story. And Encik Khalid says, we are bloated, but we still don't have enough teachers and firemen and policemen. Our next message also in relation to that, from Amril, saying that the bulk of civil servants are teachers, nurses, police officers and armies. And bear in mind the breadth and depth of the government services. There might be some unproductive members, but not all. Be fair.
Hopefully that will be the case. I mean, fairness is going to factor in when it comes to what happens. It has been made pretty clear that productivity is going to be kind of the main metric that's being used as a measurement about who stays, who goes, what departments need more, which departments need fewer. So I do think that fairness is going to enter the picture. I think it's a lot to do. The article mentioned clerical work. So in the cases of teachers, firemen, policemen, absolutely. But I think there are, when I said earlier that computers and programs can easily replace,
right,
80% of the tasks that some members of the civil service are doing, I think it's that sort of work that I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I just to add to that, that statement also, I wonder then we have to make sure that the circumstances are also fair to them to be productive.
Absolutely. Again, you can weigh in WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Balming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We have been talking about the possibility of the civil service being downsized. We've also been talking about a number of different things, including work-life balance, as well as whether or not being kind and nice might adversely affect your bank balance. And we've had some messages come through, including this from Adi.
For every person who complains about the civil service, please join the service with the pay they get before whacking them. In every organization, private or family-owned, businesses included, there will always be some pockets that are not productive. Whacklah some more public services. Bagus sangat, come lah join instead. Adi isn't with the civil service, but I know how hard it is for my parents, that how much they sacrifice for the nation with the pay that they got.
Yes, so I don't think the idea here is necessarily to whack the civil service. Instead, it's been very clear, I think, in all the communications surrounding this piece and surrounding this piece of news, that it's about trimming people who are unproductive. It's not about saying that just for no good reason the civil service needs to be downsized. At least that's how I'm reading it. Benji says, was in a grab by an expat officer yesterday who is in limbo because he doesn't know if he's going to get a job with JPJ or another government or another GLC, but hasn't been fired or offered VSS, told to just wait. Our government needs to think of better, more holistic solutions, not just populist demands like disbanding SPAD due to a few bad apples.
Yeah, I think when it comes to doing things like this, there's always gaps and mistakes that are made in between, right? Like the smaller guys tend to be left behind. And in this case, when we're talking about the civil service, it is true that these policies will potentially just hurt, you know, the more vulnerable.
And on that topic of doing it right, not just saying, look, we're going to do away with people, but kind of laying the groundwork, doing it properly, preparing people necessarily. Kyriden says, please get this order right. Grow the economy first, then downsize the government workforce, as the growing economy will then absorb the excess. Do it intelligently, as it's any government's job in the world to provide employment, be it corporate or public sector, period. Governments don't just create public sector jobs. They need to bring FDIs by making the country competitive.
Well, to be fair to the government, at the moment, they are not considering actively downsizing the civil service, but rather that they feel that there will be a natural downsizing due to AI and due to innovations in tech. Our next message comes from Faisal, who says that I support the move, but the government needs to be super careful about how they approach this, as the large majority of those redundant jobs are, it's a dangerous political tinderbox, this issue with civil service, especially now when Pakatan does not control the narrative. Sometimes the right thing to do isn't the smart thing to do.
So there it is again, right, about political communication, about whether or not you do something for the sake of it being the right thing to do, or whether you have to play certain games of perception, I suppose. And Faisal, I agree with you. I think that it is a dangerous thing to do simply for the fact that having lots and lots of unemployed, unhappy Malaysians just is never a good thing because it sets off a chain effect of so many other things that happen.
Yeah, and at the moment, as Faisal said about the narrative, the fact that the tides could very easily be turned against the Pakatan government, it is something that they have to consider strategy-wise.
So on the phone lines, we've got Samirul. Samirul, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, good evening. I just wanted to add two of my observations.
Sure.
Share with all of you. Number one, government revenue is just about it's just about enough to cover its operating expenditure. And so we borrow for our development expenditure. And as for the operating expenditure, 70% of it is locked, used to pay salaries, pensions, emoluments, and subsidies. And number two is about the definition of civil servants or public servants. This is what I don't quite understand. Because I think 70% of them comprise of doctors, dentists, teachers, lecturers, police and firemen. Why are they categorized as public servants? I don't understand. Because in other countries, they're not. And in fact, in some countries, it's the local council that pays them. So this is one of the reasons why the number does appear to be big. So I don't understand about the nomenclature, and I always wanted to know why.
Right. So when we look at the size of the civil service, mm-hmm. I suppose the argument being made there is that perhaps it's not reflective of the definition, right? What's the strict definition of that?
Correct. Yeah. Only okay. I just wanted to share these two things. So back to that thing. So we have been borrowing for our development. So we borrow like 30 or 40 billion every year to build school roads. So you can see how it snowballs very quickly. Yeah, that's all.
Samirul, thank you so much for calling. If you'd like to weigh in as well, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got some other messages that have come in, including this from Tsai, who says, yes, please trim the fat. You don't need more desks to service the growing population. You need more efficient systems to manage citizens. Place more people in posts that contribute to building the country up, rather than things like data entry.
That's a good point. And I think at the same time, also, it's worth considering the fact that maybe we still do need to retain the current system. And then, well, the current system, meaning the amount of staff that we have, but then move on to, you know, with the tech that the government uses, right? Some of it is pretty ancient.
Yes, it is. And I think part of growing that is going to be in growing more industrial revolution. Yeah, the new revolution for, you know, the 4.0. Ooh, I'm losing my words today. But yes, I think in growing that, that's when you'll have new systems enter, and that's when you'll also have new jobs created. I think for the jobs that are going out the window, you are nevertheless going to have other opportunities being created in their stead. So it's not as if one thing goes and nothing absolutely is replaced. We've got Nash on the line. Nash, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening, guys.
Hi.
Hi. So 1.7 million is a very big number, of course. But I think some of the percentages, I think some of the people that were categorized under that are like teachers and all these kind of things. I suppose the other methodology is maybe to keep the size for now and also perhaps be more smart in growing the civil service on a year-to-year basis, right? Instead of doing a mass hire, be very specific, very surgical in the people that you need. Mm. And then maybe look at the 1.7 million, because I know that the previous government used to have like dual departments, like you have like JPJ and then you have SPAD. Although, you know, some of the tasks from JPJ got transferred, you don't actually have to have two, you need to have one. But, you know, past is past, but it's more of, you know, with the staff that you have right now, how can you upskill them and move them to other areas that they can contribute to it. I suppose in the longer run, then you will come to an optimum size in terms of civil service.
Yeah, Nash, thank you so much for calling. I think that that's a very orderly, very reasonable way of going about things.
And it's also a huge undertaking, I guess, that the government has to do, because then now it not only involves retraining most, if not all, of your staff, and that would require time off, and that will also require a lot of financial resources, which I'm not sure they have at the moment.
Owen Leeds says, 20 years ago, I was the CMO of South African Tourism. We stripped 60 civil servants out to take the headcount to 50, and productivity tripled.
And that's an anecdote I hope maybe we will see in the near future if that does happen here.
We also have CY saying a shift of mindset is required for all Malaysians, more so for civil servants. Everyone needs to upskill or risk being left behind with no jobs, with technology seeping into all facets of our lives. So many cries about how it's unfair of the government to remove jobs. But truly, how long more can we expect the government to feed an overbloated source of manpower?
I think then the recent calls that we've been getting puts it into the perspective that, you know, are we actually really bloated, or is the fact that we just need to properly retrain, reassign and make them go through that process, and then will that lead to more productivity despite the high numbers, right?
I think CY's central point, though, about retraining, or rather about upskilling, is so crucial, because regardless of whether or not we're bloated, I think the call for everybody to consider how it is that they can upskill, how it is that they can diversify, is crucial, because you really don't know whether at any point you already know you're replaceable, you know, on a personal level, but you don't know at what point you will be permanently permanently replaceable, permanently obsolete in that sense. Because look, like we said, something else is going to be able to do your job that much more efficiently, that much faster. And yeah, so I think that diversification of skill is going to matter. We've got David on the line now. David, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi. I think that we should look at reassigning jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because currently, I think the level of service is not reflective. You know, there are so many of them, but we don't see satisfactory service. I think there should be more focus on serving what is necessary, right? They should have a very clear KPI. I think they sometimes are focusing on things that doesn't matter, like policing, how we should dress when we visit government offices, putting up notices, you know, telling people how to dress up, those kind of things. Those are really not their KPI. They should concentrate on things that matters. Mm-hmm. And because there are so many of them doing the same thing. I mean, for example, I give you an example. If you go to some of the libraries at the state level, you can see three or four people at the counter, okay? One will be receiving your book. The other one, the book will be passed to another person. One will chop, right? And then one will place behind the shelf. Another one will key in. So you need three or four person doing one function, basically collecting back books. That is so inefficient.
David,
honestly, I've seen that. I wanted to record it, but then it's okay, never mind. Can you have four person, and of course while waiting it, and it's not like the queue is very long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
While waiting, they read magazines, you know, playing with their phones, you know, the kind of salary that they draw. I mean, okay, their salary may not be high, but look at the resources that's wasted there.
Yes, understood, David. Thank you so much for calling. I think that is... It's an anecdote, you know, but there is something to be said about this is why you need to look at specific instances or specific sectors where there is that kind of excess, right? I think that's ultimately the aim here, to kind of be able to trim moments like that where functions are being parceled out or shared in that way and contributing to the swelling, so that then in turn, if we're talking about doctors and teachers and the like being included in the headcount of the civil service, then you have more room for that to grow.
And the move is also taking place in different ways, not as in the downsizing, but the streamlining rather, right? Recently, we saw Gobin saying that to make the fight against piracy more efficient, we got to streamline all agencies, maybe put them under one, as opposed to having just one agency doing one thing, the other one doing another. So in that sense, it's also reducing the bureaucracy and making sure these departments are more efficient.
You can keep those thoughts coming. Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and we're just taking a look at the messages that have come through in response to talking about downsizing the civil service, as well as the issue of work-life balance. We have a suggestion that's come through here from Max.
Reduce the number of ministries and have their key metrics, have the key metrics of each ministry displayed on your website. That way, the entire ministry is driven to improve those metrics and will be a good measure of productivity of that particular ministry.
And it speaks to transparency, right? To being able to see exactly what's being achieved, what are your KPIs to begin with, and then I think also being able to align that a bit more closely to public expectation and public demand, because there is, we've been talking about portfolios as well when it comes to the government and how there seems to be sometimes some overlap in terms of announcements. So I think if it's made a bit clearer, you know, this ministry is going to be doing this, you can expect this to come from this ministry, and having those achievements kind of clearly noted, achieved, not achieved, it does help.
Yeah, and I think drawing back to one of the messages that was about, well, why are you judging the civil service when you're not in it? Basically, just get a job and see how it's like to work with that pay. And I think then with that method of transparency, people then might be more empathetic and understand the inner workings of how, well, ministries work, right? So that might just mean that, well, okay, I see that you have a huge workload. I'm a bit more understanding about what you're going through.
Husni says, downsizing should start from the top. Just look at the assets the ministers declared. Some of them can afford to sacrifice all their government salary and allowances. That would bring the true meaning of serving the rakyat. Once they've done that, then only you talk about downsizing civil servants. And there's something there, but I think there's also, it's also worth pointing out that part of the reason why you want to be able to pay people for doing a good job is to avoid them looking elsewhere to top up their income. I mean, that's one of the greed is really one of the easiest ways for corruption to enter the picture, right? So I do think that if you aren't paying the people who are holding positions of power, if you're not going to pay them, someone else will. And if you're unscrupulous, then there you go.
And another perspective on this is probably the fact that, well, if the size of the civil service is reduced, then perhaps the staff can be paid more, right? Salaries can be more fairly distributed.
Yes. And then we've got this from Azami.
The main problem is mismatch in civil service deployment. Civil services deployment. Just fire the Deadwoods and political appointees of the past regime. Luckily, well, MO1 was not considered a civil servant. Otherwise, his removal would be the biggest savings. Bravo, Malaysians.
And then also earlier, we were speaking about the issue of work-life balance. Continuing a little bit a conversation from yesterday about flexible hours. Yep. Today, a new survey from Monster.com basically found that many Malaysians, I think 30% of Malaysians who do not have work-life balance, basically said it's because they aren't working in a supportive environment, you know, particularly when it comes to their managers. So we want to know, do you think you have work-life balance? And if you don't, is it partly to do with your office and kind of the culture that's been set up?
MZ says, work-life balance is a myth. I work in a company where there are specific credo about work-life balance, but it isn't practiced. If management doesn't respect working hours, people wonder why talents leave companies. As for civil service, technology will come to make things easier. Case in point, passport renewal can now be done within hours.
Yeah, that's the biggest example, I think, compared to the... Well, now it's within hours. It used to be just a day, right? And a day that really started at like 6 a.m. So it is a huge improvement. Riza says, to me, work-life balance is just perception. It became more popular, what, 10, 15 years back, perhaps? In the yesteryears, especially during the Industrial Revolution, and developing countries, people worked really, really hard. We don't hear much of people complaining about being tired and whatnot because most people were feeling appreciative for having a job that can feed their families.
And that probably boils down to the point where the salary today probably doesn't match up to the proper ability to feed your family and then, I guess, to do more than that if you wanted to.
I guess so. I would also make the argument that I think the previous generations were working very, very hard, partly so that the next generation doesn't have to, or not in the same way, that because every generation works to improve the lot of the next generation, right? So I don't think it's unfair to say then that the product of that level of work can now afford to say a little bit, I want to do the work that serves a purpose for me. I don't think it's unfair to say that. Yes, do people sometimes whine too much? Perhaps. but that's not to say that work-life balance isn't important. Magnus, on that point, says, I think the generation gap plays a part. Gen X bosses are the most tenacious and demanding, there we go, since they had to work their butts off back then. This just brings us to the point. Millennials want to do meaningful work. If it is meaningful, then the sky is no limit, when long hours might even be a blessing. On a side note, I feel that work-life balance is non-existent in the Malaysian legal profession.
And that goes across certain industries. I think if you are in the media industry, the advertising industry, and even the auditing industry, yeah, that really doesn't exist.
Keep those messages coming. You can continue to weigh in, whether it's on the subject of downsizing the civil service or let us know what your work-life balance looks like. You can call 777-332-900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.